And then we'll get started. There will be a meeting of the attendance violation policy ad hoc subcommittee on Wednesday, May 8th, 2019, at 8:30 a.m. in the school committee conference room, Cambridge Range and Latin School, 459 Broadway, Cambridge, for the purpose of discussing the CRLS attendance violation policy. It is anticipated this meeting will end no later than 10:30 a.m. This meeting is being recorded by audio device. So I think I'll just turn it right over to Dr. Kirk.
Sure, and I'm just going to take a minute because I really want to turn it right over to the folks that have been at the heart of the work. Good morning. Good morning to you. What we're hoping that we're able to do today is really provide an update of the work that has continued to happen throughout the time since we last met. One of the things that I think is really important, because I know that there was some concern about either where we left off with the big group or what had been happening, is that this group, along with a great number of other folks, and you'll have a chance to sort of see who those people include, have not only started this work, but have continued to do the work and have now incorporated it or embedded the work of trying to think about how best to support students around issues of attendance in a new way, in an ongoing fashion. So this is now something that we believe is just part of the fabric of the work. I also think I know that sometimes there is frustration when something seems like it's going on for a long time, and we've been having like this type of structured conversation for almost 3 years now. So it feels really long, but personally, I want to commend this group as well as others who have been working. The work has evolved over time. It looks actually very different now in terms of approach than it did 2 years ago, and I think that even though it feels like it was a long time, that it was time well spent and it was the right thing to do. What you'll hear a lot about this morning has to do with a sense of expectations within the school around this issue of both attendance and ADs, parameters that we set for ourselves as a school community, responsibility, and sort of the balance out of that falls under supports that sometimes look like come in the form of interventions, and sometimes are in the form of consequences. It really does depend on what the situation is. And the last piece that I will say is I think one of the biggest learnings from the work that has been happening over the last couple of years with the focus on this has been that people are not just looking at the numbers. Now, you're going to see numbers this morning because folks asked for numbers, right? But behind every single one of those numbers is a face, is a kid, is a story, is a family. And being able to respond to and work with those students and families is not a cookie cutter kind of endeavor. And I think that's probably one of the biggest learnings that has happened during this time. So I'm going to stop because really the people that have been doing the bulk of this work in great fashion want to share it with you. Mr. Smith.
Good morning to the committee. I want to thank Ms. Jackson for calling the meeting and Ms. Nolan and also Ms. Kelly for making time for us to be here today. Just before we start, I wanted the team that's with us to introduce themselves because this group is, I think you're familiar with most folks here, but there are some folks who you may not be as familiar with, and this team plus some more have been meeting around the attendance and the attendance violation issue for most of the year. So I just want to just make sure that they get acknowledged and that we know who they are. So we'll start over to my left on the end.
Bobby Tynes, assistant principal.
Susie Van Blerick, I'm dean of students.
Mona Cameron, program manager for research, assessment, and evaluation.
Ryan Fuyor is principal of the high school extension program.
Angie Weehan, district design and innovation coach.
Jamal Prince, dean of students, LDS.
Maria DiClemente, dean of students, learning community R.
Susan Spinoza, dean of students, learning community C.
And I'm really excited that Ryan is with us today because I know we've spoken often in subcommittee meetings before, and there have been times when Ryan has been available and sometimes I haven't been available. There have been times that I've been available, Ryan hasn't been available. And moving forward, certainly, we want to be sure that both, since we're leading both, you know, schools, high schools that we are together. So it's really exciting to have Ryan be here as well. And he's going to talk a little bit about some of the things that are happening at his school-specific site. Dr. Chart pretty much framed the work that we're doing today. And we actually have a quite extensive presentation that we want to share with you. So I think you're going to be able to see it. It'll be behind you, Emily, if you're looking at it. We'll move from there. So this is our update to the committee. The first thing we want to do, I think Dr. Turk did it really, really, really well, is frame this piece of work. We'll come back to this framing later on in the broader context, because for some time I have felt that we have talked about AV attendance violations separate from our work around chronic absenteeism and attendance. And we want to explicitly tie that together. And really, when we talk about next steps, we really want the subcommittee, be it that it's looking at the attendance violation policy, would also help us joining in talking and using the same language. When we're talking about attendance violations and tardiness and kids being late, we're talking about attendance and chronic absenteeism, and we see those on the same continuum. And that work, I think you'll see, is pretty consistent. We certainly want to be responsive to the motion, and it's explicit as for some data that we will share with you that folks will be able to dig through with you in a minute. Again, returning to the broader context after we look at that the data, and then we'll talk about a little bit about next steps and have some time for questions. I do want to say at the very beginning that we have budgeted that time at 10:30, but understanding that some of the folks here may have emergency-related issues because of student management, that they may need to step out for. Okay?
Thanks.
So having said that, are we ready with the data? All right, so just getting ourselves grounded back in the motion that was passed 1951, school committee requests to draft a new policy. We will be talking about that towards the end of our slides. The committee requests data from the fall of 2018 semester showing the following attendance data disaggregated by lunch status, race, ethnicity, gender, disability status, and ELL status, and those four categories. So we're going to go through those slides right now so you can see all each of those pieces. And folks here are intimately aware of that data, so take it from me.
Okay, good morning, everybody. New voice. I'm going to give you a moment to just take a peek at this. I'm going to ask you to look at it in a vertical way and look across. It was asked of us to have the data for a number of students absent and tardy in semester one, 2018-2019, and that is with at least one absence, so the data is rather large for those numbers. But as you can see, we were asked, we have a number of students across the board, and then
this is excused also. Okay.
Yep, these includes excused absences. Okay. So those are the numbers demographically. I'll just give you a moment to take a quick look at that.
And how do we want to do questions? I guess it's the pleasure of the committee. I mean, if there are questions about the particular slide, we should probably stay there and ask the questions around.
If it's an information question.
Is
that all right with you, Mr. Tan?
Sure.
Okay. But it looks like, as you say, almost everybody's absent or tardy at least once.
At least once.
It's hard not to be.
Next slide?
Next slide.
Just tell me when to go to the next slide.
Okay, so this is without a coups. Go ahead.
Yep, so this is, now we're getting into AV. I just want to clarify, this is students who met AV criteria. This is not necessarily the students who were assigned an AV, and we've talked about that difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
So some students are not assigned even though they've met, because we're aware of extenuating circumstances. And so you can see here, those are the numbers. The only other clarifying piece is these are people that, these represent students. So it's students who have met the criteria at least once during Q1 and or Q2.
Mm-hmm.
So some of those students met those criteria for Q1 and Q2, just to clarify.
Okay.
When you say AV criteria,
yeah,
does that mean that three or four
So they have four absences.
Okay, so this isn't just one. This is meeting the AV criteria. Okay.
Okay. On this slide, you'll see that these are the students who were assigned an AV and were also given the buyback option and who pursued it. In this case, you'll see that the bottom number there will indicate in quarter one, there were 42 students who decided to buy it back, the overall number. And then in quarter two, there were 71 students who decided to buy it back. And you can see the demographic information that pertains to the makeup of the students, similar to the previous slides.
In buying it back, they do not lose.
So they did not get the deduction for 10 points. Mm-hmm.
So this will show by semester and by subgroups that were requested, students whose grades were reduced because they were assigned an AV. Mm-hmm. That's broken down as you know per subgroups that you mm-hmm. that were requested, and it's interesting. We'll see it on the next slide by quarter in most of the groups. And just the interesting data that I noticed is that it has the numbers were reduced from quarter one to quarter two. Mm-hmm.
And so these are all of the folks that have been working on this work starting last spring with the clerks and the deans. So you'll see deans and students at the top, principals as well, clerks, guidance counselors, students as well. The clerks have joined us at times during this fall, but it's mostly been the deans and students, principals, and district folk. And then I've been meeting, and we've all been meeting actually in teams with students as well. So there's a long list there you can read and mm-hmm. see if there's any questions about this slide.
Let me just ask a quick question about the slide before. In looking at the proportion of students that bought back versus didn't buy back, is it about the same for different demographic groups? So if you had 100, you know, half of all kids in each group bought back, or do you have any sense of percentages?
Right.
Is it proportional to the representation in the overall group?
That plus in terms of how many actually were in AV. In other words, are people taking advantage of the buybacks equally across different types of groups? I guess you may not. You can send me the numbers later, and I'll take a look at it. It's not a critical question. I was just curious if you knew.
I will send you the numbers later, but this point,
great.
It'd be an assumption to
never mind
on our part. But that is something.
So it's pretty. If you could just do the numbers and just quick run the percentages and send that to us, that'd be helpful.
Okay.
Yeah. Or just okay. Great. Thanks.
Other questions about the data? All right, so Angie was just talking about a design team that's been meeting. And this design team is met, as Angie was saying,
once a week.
So we meet weekly to talk about attendance-related issues and think about improving our attendance, which also includes conversations about AVs.
And so this is the broader context Damon was speaking about earlier, that it's hard to just focus on the AAV without thinking about attendance in general, especially chronic absenteeism, because we're definitely seeing a connection there. So this is our
by definition, that's what it is.
Approach. You know, if we improve attendance procedures and we improve attendance engagement, then we'll reduce chronic absenteeism and improve overall attendance and tardiness. So that's our approach.
Right. Makes sense. It's totally AV is chronic absenteeism.
Exactly.
So through the work that we've done in the weeks that we have met, we've updated some procedures on, and kind of goes with the communication earlier and daily with families, just around attendance reporting. Created a plan to support teachers. We've met routinely as a team. We created data dashboard of chronically absent students for a learning tool, and then High School Extension has developed personalized learning plans for their students. So the design sessions with the chronically absent students, there's a separate one with freshmen surveyed and kind of brought into the dean's space or guidance counselors. Angie and Susie, I think, met with some of the chronically absent students in the principal's conference room. I think reasons why you're absent, what the school culture looks like. reviewed comparable programs and districts and their attendance and what their procedures are. Mm-hmm. Started a landscape of resources to identify the gaps in support for these students that are chronically absent. And created plans for specific seniors and individuals and subgroups, just because we're kind of in crunch time to see what we can do for them as they crawl towards graduation. And then worked on a new AV policy, which is just proposed, not finalized.
And so this slide is a bit of good news, I would say. We were able to get the numbers and see that we have reduced mm-hmm. chronic absence percentage points mm-hmm. year to date.
Okay.
So as you would do in any instance of this nature, a multi-tiered approach, we obviously want to look at students, looking at it from the universal, all students who would fall under the category, particularly of, in the case of an AV situation, that they're all given a certain set of remedy. And moving forward with that, you'll see that there's some other options. Some are new, and some have been they've been done in the past as well. But in the interest of all, it's an effort, as you saw earlier, to move students in the direction of coming to school and being successful there mm-hmm. and not being penalized and such.
So proposed, I stress that word, provision to student attendance and AV policy. Our teams within the learning community will work with students who meet the criteria for an AV mm-hmm. and will implement one of the following three supports. Student can complete a BIPAC, which is available to all students and pretty much what we currently use. Enroll in a studentship workshop. This would be more for students that had a potential repeat issue mm-hmm. with AV and attendance issues. And that'll help them with some time management and some student skill support stuff. And then the third C is individual support plans, which are created within the LC team, given a lot of extenuating circumstances that students may have. So kind of an example of a student with, you know, A would be a kid who knows they're late but stops at Starbucks every day anyways. Mm-hmm. You know, the student that may B would be a kid that has some sort of timing issues. And we recognize that it might be due to, you know, some obviously time management or executive functioning pieces, just kind of can't get their stuff together. And we work with that type of student to help support and build some of those skills that hopefully would reduce the attendance and tardiness. And the individual support plan, our students that we know have some chronic outside issues around hospitalization, mental health issues, or other issues. Mm-hmm.
In this, this also relates to what I just spoke about with the multi-tiered attendance approach.
And then if the student doesn't successfully complete or finish the program above of ABSC, then they may receive the 10-point reduction.
Other piece I just wanted to and ask Ryan a little bit about is, so do you remember from the slides previous we talked about the extension program has an individual support plans already in place. And so in developing our individual support plans, we certainly would be taking the lead from what Ryan is doing with students at the extension program as a way. And so I don't know if you want to talk a little bit more about support plans that you guys have worked on.
Sure, it's been a growing process this year for sure. We started out working with all of our students on individual support plans, which became a little bit overwhelming. So we've taken a more tiered approach to that. Some of our more high need students are the ones that we're working more closely with the support plans. We're actually meeting in June with Bridget Rodriguez from the Harvard mm-hmm. Redesign Lab, who's done a lot of work around individual support plans and personalized learning to try to get some feedback on what we're doing to improve our program. But it's worked pretty well so far with the students that we've done it. I'd say we've got about 15 students right now that we're working one-on-one with, and it has definitely improved, I would say, over 50% of their attendance.
The other piece I'd say is that, you know, for C, we're officially calling it an individual support plan because it's what us being at the extension program, and it's something that we want to formalize in a way, but every dean here, if we go back to the first set of slides, mm-hmm. there are the numbers of students who met the criteria or qualified for an AV, and the number of students who also met the criteria but had an AV and bought back their time, and then our students who we knew of their extenuating circumstances. Mm-hmm. And so formalizing that process and calling an individual support plan, I think, brings some recognition to it, but there already exists a great significant number of ways in which the deans or students have already supported students that they know have extenuating circumstances or situations that, you know, their attendance is impacted by that, but we're not impacting them with the 10-point reduction. And you'll see that's probably the greatest number of students across the board are seeing that. We are trying to formalize that process now with the ISP, but that's something that we've developed and thought about in our work and are certainly going to be working with the extension program to make sure ours is as close to theirs as possible. And we still have, at the last sentence, if a student does not successfully complete that support plan, they may receive a 10-point reduction.
And I just want to add two pieces of information here. As folks are aware, the student attendance policy itself is like pages long.
Yeah.
And so this portion of this recommendation or proposed revision is really part of that very last section of the attendance policy that focuses on AV. I won't read the whole thing, but it at one point, or what it currently reads as, is a student who receives an AV for any given class in any given term will receive a 10-point reduction. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the end, right? And so this is sort of the evolution of a way to try to bring to the forefront all of the kinds of supports and interventions that have been discussed throughout the year. And I also think it's important to note one of the reasons why the buyback is included in here as a continuation is because that was a student-generated option. Mm-hmm. And the group felt very strongly about trying to balance ideas that had come forward from students with ideas that were coming forward from the adults as well.
Just one question about the ISPs. Can you just give us an example of what might be in an ISP? What supports would be put in place
so
for a student in that category?
I once had a student who every morning had to help his autistic little brother get bathed, get the bus, and because the bus wouldn't pick up to a certain time, this kid couldn't get here until 8:30.
Yeah.
And so we can't penalize that student for something that's completely out of his hands. Mom worked the night shift and couldn't change that. So that's something kind of, and that student couldn't necessarily stay after school every day to buy back consistently because that same little brother needed to be picked up at the end of the day. So it can be things like working with the teacher of like, okay, this student's going to miss 30 minutes of math every day. We can't stay after school, so how else can we make that work?
Good.
Right? We don't want to penalize this kid. What else can we do? So we kind of balance using lunchtime and working with the PE teachers. Can we miss PE sometimes to kind of do other things?
Okay.
Things like that. That could also be working with our homeless population, making sure that they have a way to get to school. A lot of times they're in Boston, so their commute could be an hour to 90 minutes, depending on where they're coming from, how many different buses and trains they have to take. Things like that that really let them know we care, and we're going to give them everything we can. We want them here at 8:05,
right?
And if that's just not a possibility, we can work with them. I don't know if you guys want to.
But it sounds like it's as much working with the teachers as it is with the student and the family sometimes.
Most stakeholders, as many stakeholders you can get involved.
Yeah. Mental health can be another one that plays a role there. Anxiety. So really making sure that they have the supports in place so that their anxiety doesn't grow, because of course we want them in school, but we recognize that sometimes that's really hard to get into the building when you have the building makes you anxious. So really working with outside providers to make sure that we help them. So how can you help? This is a list of things that we would love support with in any way. So of course, supporting the buyback option, help support studentship workshops. We're still in the design process for that. Community and city supports arise for individual support plans. So those are the ones that we need really unique and creative supports to help some of our students. So that could be a place that we really need some support. Working with the MBTA, we know that one of the most frequent reasons students are chronically tardy is because of transportation issues. So continuing to work with the MBTA about increasing the frequency and cost for our students. Mm-hmm. Doesn't say it up there, but I know that's another thing. Yep. Increased community and family awareness and support, really helping this become a city goal. Mm-hmm. To help kids get to school. Encouraging students of all grade to improve their attendance so that kids want to be here, so that when they're running late, they don't think, well, I'm already late, I might as well go to Starbucks, mm-hmm. right? Really helping shift that of, oh no, I'm running late, so I'm gonna put a little pep in my step. And create incentives to further help with that.
So I mean, I think one piece that we really want to talk about is situating the chronic tardiness and chronic absenteeism as part of the same continuum, and that we found that there was a strong correlation. I don't know what the numerical percentage is, but
between 2/3 to 3/4 of the students getting AP were also chronically absent.
65%
of students that overlapping. Yeah. So, you know, we're talking about a significant number of students who are both chronically absent and also tardy, mm-hmm. Or at some point tardy or meet the criteria for the AV policy. And we don't want to see those as distinct pieces of work. Mm-hmm. They do have different features, and the AV 10-point reduction is a mechanism for addressing some of the AV related issues, but that is just one mechanism of part of a larger, broader context related to attendance. And as was discussed before, we have, as a group, made some significant changes to the way in which we have been working with attendance. So I don't know if this group knows, but we've changed our phone calls. We make automated phone calls that go out twice a day, much earlier in the day. We've had a training with our staff members about doing attendance more accurately and less frequently, mm-hmm. So that we do it, we call it one and done, mm-hmm. So that you do it one time and be done with it. We work with our clerks to talk about recording procedures, because all the data that we gather on attendance has to be accurate, correct, so that we can have information to share with families and make those phone calls. This group is continuing to design. Each learning community dean here has met with their ninth graders about school attendance and what makes a difference in terms of whether you are attending or not attending. And those that work still continues. And we've communicated more with families around the importance of attendance, even seniors, I think, related to the end of the school year. And we found some interesting data about chronic absenteeism and tardiness about when we see huge swings in attendance and data. And so this group has really been working and moving, and AV is a part of that.
And the conversation with this group, I'm sorry to interrupt, mm-hmm. but you're not going to say this about yourselves. The conversation with this group, mm-hmm. among this group, looks very different now than it did 2 years ago, a year ago, 6 months ago. One of the last meetings that I was in attendance where people were actually, they were looking at the data specifically, it sort of went like this. What about Emily Dexter? We haven't seen her for a couple of days. Has anybody checked on her?
Yeah.
Bobby Tynes, he did XYZ and this is how my learning community has handled it. Does anybody else have any?
Yeah.
I mean, it's by name, by situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really focused in a very different kind of way. Yeah.
Well, it's really building relationships. Mm-hmm. And so that student becomes comfortable in the building of the relationships with the learning community. That's what it sounds like to me. Like they know that they're going to get support. Mm-hmm. So that improves it.
I just also want to acknowledge the contributions of Angie in helping us with the design lab for us to be thinking about attendance differently. And that experience has been good. I think holding us and really thinking about different ways has been really important. And then also a big shout out to Kimona and Jen Amagon, who have really been helping us analyze data from a larger level and then pinpointing other information. That stuff I think is really important. It also speaks to the need for us to have databases that can integrate and communicate with each other. Their dexterity with data is above our level to do so, and not all of our systems communicate really, they can integrate with each other really well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really lucky to have had her be part of our team, and as well as Jen Amagon and, mm-hmm. and Angie. So having said that, we will open up for questions that you have, and certainly the presentation is yours.
Great, so members of the committee, and if anybody who's joined us would like to come and ask questions or join the discussion, please feel free to take the chair. Patty, you have
sure.
questions?
This is pretty exciting. I really appreciate all the work here. Looking through my notes from the last couple of years, as Dr. Turk said, it's changed a lot. And I also want to thank Emily Dexter for, she really pushed this on school committee several years ago. And worked with, and then the whole school committee worked with the administration to say this is really important. And I think then that led to a lot of work. So it took a huge team, and I really want to appreciate some of the fact that this was a case where the policymaker stepped in with working in collaboration, because that's the way I think really good work gets done. I have a couple questions. What do we know about why students are absent? I mean, that's the key, right? Why they're absent, why they're tardy. And I know that whenever it was a year or so ago, Aspen now includes a finer articulation of, if I'm the teacher marking Terry gets absent, I have to say why, right? So what do we know from that data?
The LC staff is one that'll mark the
right.
absentee, not the teacher.
Oh, right, not the teacher.
Yeah, yeah. Again, a number of them that are there's a lot of just school-based anxiety, and I think there's also the disengagement in school. So a kid may see, like, I'm already failing, what's the point of hurrying up to get to a class? We know that there's some sabbaticals, that there's family vacations. I mean, and that's not the bulk of the absenteeism, but those are hits to the chronic attendance, chronic absentee issues.
But we have that data, right?
Well,
I mean,
I don't think we broke down why a kid is absent.
We didn't ask for that. But do you record that?
We might not have asked.
In Aspen, it will say why a kid is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at a note saying that the dashboard allows it. So I'm just curious as to whether you've looked at it and what have you learned from it? Because that data is, at least according to the notes I had from before, we were told that.
Mm-hmm. I think it's
sick.
So you
looked at it?
Anecdotally, right? When we get the phone calls, it's sick.
Sick is the common
hospitalized. Mm-hmm. But it's always like just sick. And whether the drill down is mental health related
right.
illness or.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm sick with a cold or the flu or whatever it means. And obviously there's waves of like flu, but periodically
right.
there's kids are out
right.
for 4 days at a time, and
mm-hmm.
then you keep seeing them.
But also, I think the deans can speak to, each of them had a ninth grade design lab experience where they met with ninth graders about what could be done to improve their attendance related to, you know, what are things that you connect with or don't connect with school. So I'd invite you to talk about that opportunity as well, about what you discovered, what themes that, you know, emerged from that work
right.
as well.
Mm-hmm. Right, because we know student engagement is part of it, and motivation, as you said. If you're not that engaged for whatever reason, either because you think you're failing the class or you're not sure you're, for whatever reason, I don't know what. I'm just curious as to what.
There were a couple of things that we did to try to figure out why, because the why, you're right, is the heart of it. First of all, I want to give the deans so many shout-outs. Like, they know these students in and out in a way that a data dashboard is helpful, but they know them in a really intimate, powerful way. They know their families, they know how they get to school, where they go after school, who they hang with. And that's really hard to capture in something like a
right.
data dashboard. But what we did do, with help from Jen Amagon, is do a drop-down menu of what some of those reasons were. And we looked at those and we talked about 5 to 10 of the most chronically absent students in each one of the learning communities and what we learned from that. And transportation was a big one. Mental health probably was the largest one for chronic absenteeism, whether that was mental health personally or mental health with your family.
Mm-hmm.
Addiction came up
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
Physical health came up. But health in general was like probably the number one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea of maybe not feeling safe
mm-hmm.
or and having anxiety around that
mm-hmm.
as well. And that's also kind of what came up with just a couple of folks in the freshman
mm-hmm.
session. So like there were three big populations where the attendance declined. Second half of senior year, right? So part of that is maybe that's not anxiety, maybe that's I'm already in college
mm-hmm.
or I'm not gonna graduate, I'm out. The other one was mental health. And Susie and I, at least in our freshman design session, some other things that came up for freshmen were choice.
mm-hmm. feeling like they would be more engaged if they had more choice. Mm-hmm.
So there were a lot of, just to add on to that, there were the kids that missed the whole school day, which were a lot
yes.
of those first things you named.
Yes.
Our ninth graders were a little reticent to speak about those things, to kind of admit that I miss whole days because of my anxiety, but they really gave us insight into why kids are cutting specific classes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So they, you know, a lot of things came up around lunch, if you
lunch,
were, right? And they said 30 minutes isn't enough time for me to get my lunch, eat my lunch, relax,
mm-hmm.
have a moment, print something. They talked a lot of, I just need time during my day.
Yeah.
And so since they don't have time during their day, they're just making time
yeah.
by just not going to class when they choose
yeah.
to. And that often is the kind of first period and third
yeah.
period. They struggle to get here for lots of reasons. They talked about the start time being tough.
Too early.
Yeah.
4 minutes
length,
between
the
transition.
Length of class.
The length of class. 80 minutes being great if
yeah.
you love your class.
Uh-huh.
Not being great if you don't love your class.
Yeah.
The 4 minutes in between. And then we started starting some kind of prototype where they were like, maybe we could order our food and it would be ready for us off the streets. So we pick it up and have more time to socialize. So then it started to get in this ID kind of phase.
Yeah.
But the freshmen were definitely...
Yeah. They definitely wanted more control, that idea of
choice,
especially our ninth grade schedules are, you have to take so many gen eds that
yeah.
they have
yeah.
very little room for
right.
electives.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were just kind of like, I just bounced from 80-minute yeah. intense academic class to 80-minute intense academic class, and the only elective I have necessarily is PE,
mm-hmm.
right? And PE is great for some kids, that's exactly what they want to like get the energy out, and for other kids it's a nightmare, as we know. And so that was something our ninth graders really brought up.
And then for the most chronically absent students, I mean, we had the ninth graders, they were saying things like feeling welcomed, feeling heard, feeling like they had
yeah.
purpose. Second half of senior year is a whole different scary boat.
Yeah.
Some students don't come
mm-hmm.
because they want to do a fifth year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the world
mm-hmm.
is scary,
oh,
right? Or they're really thinking about what does that mean to be part of the community, not
yeah.
be part of the community.
Mm-hmm.
So there, it's so individualized, and
yeah.
they give a lot of credit to the deans for knowing the students in such
mm-hmm.
a deep way, and the,
yeah.
and the administration. It's just there's not a one size fits all, but those things that came to the top were definite. Like mental health was a pretty much a huge, like the
wow.
one of the biggest.
I think to say mental health is also undiagnosed. Like we see the manifestations
yes.
of what would
yeah.
be anxiety
yeah.
and or depression or whatever,
yeah.
and they don't have a social worker. They don't have you know. For shortages across the nation of mental health support, I think it's an identification. Susie was working with the kid yesterday. I was like, Susie, he's in the hallway. So she grabbed and I sent him to the office. He sat with her.
Mm-hmm.
She's helping him with math and just looking at like, wow, of course he wouldn't want to go to math because he has no skill.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I, and again, whether I'm looking like doesn't have a service in math, but it's very clear there's,
mm-hmm.
I would assume, right, this kid has great anxiety about math because he does not know how to do the math.
Mm-hmm.
In front of them.
Yeah, right.
So I think there's just a lot of misdiagnoses, not undiagnoses, but again,
yeah.
we kind of old hat at this and we see how it manifests.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to follow up on that because that
mm-hmm.
is exactly what I would have expected, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some form of
yeah.
mental health. We say it's motivation, but in fact, underneath motivation is obviously often
mm-hmm.
things like depression or anxiety or fears or. Something else. I mean, and yet it's very individual. There are some students who feel like I can probably pass this class and not show up most of the time, so I'm going to do that. Who cares? On the mental health, so what's the next step then? So, right, because if you have a student who has anxiety or depression or it's undiagnosed and they don't necessarily need a psychiatric outplacement, although there's some of those in this school as well, how do we make sure that those supports are provided, particularly because just like AV is chronic absenteeism, mental health is related to this, and a wraparound approach needs to happen. Even though these are high school students who are testing their independence, they clearly need a support
I think that's
system.
Where we're kind of coming to you as well, because as I know, the deans have 400 plus students,
mm-hmm.
right? And if we're saying mental health is one of the issues and you don't necessarily have staffing for all of that, that's where the city really has to come in. And support us because there's so many resources in the city and there's 24 hours in a day. And if students are here for 6 to 8 of those hours or we can't get them here for that, that's where I think there could be a really beautiful partnership. The other thing that came up with mental health was also alternative pathways to graduation
mm-hmm.
because this doesn't fit mm-hmm. and doesn't work for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Ryan and the mm-hmm. deans and the administrators here at Sorella were thinking about that. Those were two other huge design challenges that
mm-hmm.
came to the surface
mm-hmm.
that
if we focus just on those, we could spend years on those. But they really wanted to, and rightly so, focus on the design challenge that we were focused on.
Yeah.
And so that's where I think the city, a city like Cambridge, could be so helpful and resourceful. I know Family Policy Council and other people have offered to help.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I think the ask at the end is, so what ideas do you guys have?
Mm-hmm.
What are you thinking in terms of all these shared students that we have?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
yeah.
so-and-so is here for 6 hours, but where are they for the other 18 hours?
Mm-hmm.
And who else can help?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where do they shine where they might not shine here?
Yeah. Yeah.
So even if there was something coming.
But there are certain obstacles that exist within the system.
Yeah, definitely.
In terms of like referring, I'm trying to think, but there's the health clinic or whatever that's inside the high school.
Right.
But if you don't have the right insurance, you can't get connected to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think there's also ways of maybe with the Cambridge Health Alliance and talking with them.
Or mentorship.
Other ways that we can connect students that we know need those supports.
Yeah.
And mental health is such a big, right?
Yes.
Because it has lots of different manifestations depending on what's going on with their family or the way the student is feeling about their own ability to succeed and all of that. So making sure that they're getting connected with the right supports, which I know you're working on in terms of the personalized plan, but the right supports that are gonna help support even further. So,
and a 14-year-old may not often is not ready for counseling.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Counseling's not the magic fix.
Right.
And
right. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's also the challenge. We think like, oh, they have an illness. Let's give them a social worker. That's not
right.
the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the family, not the student.
Diagnosing is not always the direction you should go in at all. It's like getting a sense of where
they need.
Exactly.
Sure.
Because that can start following them or they feel something about being named, right?
Sure. So I'll just ask a couple of questions, but first I just want to make clear just how appreciative I am of this work. I'm not surprised at what the conversations have been like. I'm not surprised at all because I know all you, but I am very appreciative and impressed and just feel very grateful to have all of you in our school. One of my questions is, teachers. How much have teachers been involved? I know at the CEA, president raised this at a school committee meeting before. How much have the teachers been part of this, and how comfortable they are with this process, and what's their role then?
Can I just clarify? Do you mean with the AV conversation, with the chronic absentee conversation, or with the work we do generally in terms of our individual
students?
Well,
some of the AV policy, because they'll be the ones who are reporting and
plus it's all the same.
Hmm?
It's all related.
Yeah, I mean,
they shouldn't be separate.
In general, but do you feel like the teachers have been part of this conversation in some way? And or maybe, Dan, if you have any thoughts you could share with us, but it'd be good to get some sense of how this works with the whole staff.
So I can just tell you off the cuff, that the 10-point reduction piece has concerned teachers. Us moving away from the 10-point piece, I think it's contributed to a feeling of climate of accountability not being present at the high school.
Teachers really want that.
I believe there are a significant number of teachers who believe that we are making a mistake by not holding a certain level of accountability for students. And I think it's been difficult for our deans of students to make those cases. I mean, I think all of our teachers know about the special cases, but even in preparation for today's meeting, I'm at the door, because you remember 2 years ago we got rid of our tardy line, right? Remember we used to have the tardy lines that we gave out the slips every morning.
Oh yeah, my kid was in that a lot.
Right, we used to do that all the time, and folks were very concerned about how that started people's day off, right? So 2 years ago we changed that dynamic, and now the deans are at the doors, or whoever's at the door in the morning. We had some teachers at the door. Sometimes we have teachers at the door. We had Vice President Billy McDonald in the beginning, first part of the year. He was at the door every day, which is really cool. He can't do it anymore.
Like
but it was just nice, right? So we do, if you come to the door, we invite anybody here, come to the door in the morning. We greet people. It's a great way to start the morning off. But I just remembered, you know, there would be some days where we would count with a clicker. Those numbers are large.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The numbers are larger than they were before. On a daily basis, I would say between 8:05 and 8:15, we're getting more kids coming in late, just by anecdotally seeing myself, than we did when we had the tardy line. And there's just no...
Because the tardy line isn't there, you mean?
I think we have kind of reverse engineered ourselves from a certain level. Like, at the different number, like, so...
It feels more lax to them?
I think it feels more lax.
Okay.
I think it feels more lax, and I think that there's an opportunity cost of that, right?
Yeah.
So kids are coming in less stressed because they're late, but they also are coming in late,
yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
So we're transferring some of that, you know, so, you know, what's a teacher supposed to do in this sense of situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we have some opportunity costs here. Like, there's just, it feels better on one end, but I think on the back end, I've heard from many staff members who are concerned about what is the level of accountability related to this, right? And staff members not wanting to feel like they have to be the person that is monitoring attendance. That's something that the dean of students are supposed to be doing, right? And so I think that's a challenge for us. And I'm happy that we've done some things, but I want to be 100% honest with you and think that and say that we have to find the right balance between telling kids life will get in the way and sometimes you should be afforded the opportunity to be tardy and be late.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not doing, I think, what we're supposed to be doing as an educational institution if we're not holding some level of accountability for students to be where they need to be at the time they need to be there. And I do think I've received that information from teachers quite often. I would say it's the majority, but it's a very vocal group of staff members who I have spoken to have said, this is about accountability. We're not doing right by our kids in that way.
Well, let me just clarify. The 10-point reduction is in place. Correct?
It is in place.
Okay, so it hasn't, that tool has not been taken away from teachers.
The tool has not been taken away, but from our previous experience first semester when we suspended it.
Last year.
It was like it was just like a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
I think we haven't fully resolved and come back to that. I think we still are applying the 10-point piece, but it doesn't. I think it might have carried a certain level of like it was automatic before, and now it's less automatic.
There's a process. Right. I mean, that's part of this process you're describing.
Right. We had systems in place before, like. As difficult as it was, I mean, we had the tardy line, right?
Right.
And you could visibly see these are kids being held accountable for their tardiness, right?
Mm-hmm.
They got slips to go into the classroom.
Okay.
That's not there anymore. Now, if a staff member, anybody comes down, they see people like, hey, how you doing? Come on, walk in. Like, there's no, people don't feel any kind of like, kids are sauntering in with Starbucks, with Dunkin' Donuts, and you're saying good morning to them, and they're late.
Yeah.
Right, that doesn't feel like accountability, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't see a whole list of teachers or of kids getting AVs every semester because we keep that pretty private, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what is a person to think about to say, kids just come walk in whenever they want to, they do whatever they want to, and it creates that, I think it contributes to that feeling of like lack of accountability, which I know is in the ether in this space.
Yeah. However, can I just add to that piece? When a student in the past was coming in, and I'm not refuting what they were saying at all, when a student was coming in and they were late and they knew they were late and they had gone to Starbucks anyway and had to wait in that line, it was really difficult to get a really good read on who was coming to our school that day.
Mm-hmm.
Because they may most likely be annoyed at the fact that they got to stand in line.
Right, they're in line, right.
So when they're coming in and we're saying, good morning, come on in, it's warm inside, you know, glad to see you. And they're still perhaps annoyed about something. That's an opportunity for all of us to get eyes on that on that child and say, hey, what's up? You're not you today. What's going on?
Yeah.
So I was opposed to getting rid of the tardy line. I'll be very honest about that. And now I thoroughly enjoy it. When I'm able to be in front of the school, I think it's an important piece to starting the day, not only for our students, but for us as well. And I like that Damon invited you folks to join us when you can. Because it's a great way to start the day with the students and, again, get that read on them to see who's out of character, who's in need of mental health services that day. Because it might not be a diagnosed situation, but right. you can diagnose it right there and go, oh, right. Susie,
and
guess what?
Whatever right. is going on
right.
at that time.
One other piece that you had asked about in terms of your question about the staff, mm-hmm. one of the things that we do realize or are realizing that with the AV buyback and the staff involvement in terms of students being able to spend time with them, it's been a positive relationship building opportunity for students.
Yeah.
We're finding teachers to build relationship with kids that honestly never thought would happen because the kid's not in the class, the kid is failing the class. Mm-hmm. And my experience now has been that has been probably the most positive outcome. Mm-hmm. When students are saying, this teacher here, what I didn't think would,
yeah.
is. And mm-hmm. so we knew there was some reluctance in the beginning because
yeah.
there was some lack of clarity around how teachers were going to be involved. But I think we've straightened that out. And I think that has spread throughout the building.
Oh,
but I think teachers are understanding that a lot better and
yeah.
more willing to get involved.
Oh, good, because I do remember the last year that was one of the big issues, and teachers feel like it was going to be a burden to them,
yeah.
have to create more work, but you feel like that's
my experience with the
out.
Students that I had, and I believe with others, it's been very positive. The kids, I've got teachers beaten down by email or however they find it, always saying, did he get you the stuff? Did he or she get you the stuff? Because I work with that kid, I'm
uh-huh.
like, you're all set.
Okay.
Kids all set.
That's
I don't think teachers want to be told that they're the ones
right.
that have to, and that's not what we're saying.
Okay.
Yeah,
kids
they
go
want,
to
if it's benefiting them to stay after school because they need help in that subject
okay.
area,
right.
and that teacher's saying, yeah, she stayed with me for half an hour it, via email, like letting me know,
yep.
that's super helpful.
Mm-hmm. Has this led to any conversations about the structure of time and what time you start and lunchtime and passing time? And I know this is something that you were talking about independent of this. Where are those conversations going? Because it feels like these are structural issues that result in kids not coming to class on time or at all. Where's the
including, can I just ask, we had a school committee order about the passing time, and was that part of this conversation?
No.
That was a couple years ago. That never got to you?
No.
Okay.
Did you, you wanted to join in?
Yeah, I guess,
just,
I'm a parent.
Yeah, just remind us of your name, because I forgot.
Wendy McDowell is my name. And I just wanted to add on to that question a little, because that was one of mine as well.
Yeah.
Was also,
close the chair.
Was also the curricular issue also, that when you get this feedback from ninth graders, like, you know, I mean, I can't even imagine how complicated it is to schedule the number of kids that are in school and to get them back. I remember this from my daughter when she was here. So let me acknowledge that I know that, okay, but as I ask this. But still, ninth graders are crying out, we want more choice. Maybe we want an elective or whatever. Why not make that elective first period, you know, so that the thing is it's the most, you know, interesting, desirable for kids to be in school. So I don't know. I know that sounds like
a
simple fix, but
David,
I mean, bigger question for the curricular.
No, it's not a simple thing.
Yeah.
So one of the things that the deans have been open to this year that we've been piloting in a smaller...
Can you speak up?
Yeah, one of the things that the deans have been open to and administration this year is piloting these smaller pop-up courses, whether it's a Hip Hop X Lab or Flagways at Pause or Design Life or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things the deans did say around some of these electives is they are would be better first or last period of the day if they were out of the school.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really hard to make a huge structural change because there's so many people, but they've been really open to prototyping ideas like that,
yeah.
which then give us information and more data around what's working and what's not.
Yeah.
To make a structural change, to say there should be electives across the board for every freshman, first period, I think is really hard, but I think that they're, in my opinion, I feel like they've been listening to freshmen and other people that have been advocating for these sort of pop-up courses that we've been trying.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we've been kind of playing in that space. That's just my opinion. I don't know if anybody.
I think we. So
I want Dan to speak also.
No,
go ahead, David.
Later on,
Dan,
you guys talk, and then I'll be afterwards. I would just say that, you know, so we run courses all throughout the day. So there are some students who are getting those elective courses that they like first block of the day. I think we. So that doesn't mean that we can't think about ways to have more of that be the experience. But we also, I think, can't, there are a couple of things. Like one, breakfast is big for us.
Mm-hmm.
Folks coming in, getting a good breakfast is a challenge for us. And then again, the bus routes on the MBTA, we anticipate like the traffic next year with the new opening of the new building on on Cambridge Street is going to return that traffic pattern back to what it has been prior to, you know, previous to the being. And that space is going to be even bigger. And we know the 69 bus again, I keep saying this, the 69 bus provides a special bus just for CRLS after school. And we have talked here before about flipping that bus on my own volition, albeit a couple of years ago, the MBTA refused to switch that bus. Mm-hmm. What we want that bus to do is be transferred from the afternoon cycle to the morning cycle. Same allocation of buses, just the bus that leaves here at 2:35, mm-hmm. flip that to leaving Leechmere at like 7:15.
Right. Just one bus?
It's mm-hmm. literally one bus that starts here in the afternoon that they allocate just to our school to go down Cambridge Street in the afternoon. We don't even get into the equity about it because...
We don't understand that, but...
Yeah,
if we had one bus, if CPS had one bus that made that run in the morning, would that alleviate the problem?
I don't know about that, but
no,
we have
MBTA
I mean, it might be,
sense.
But the MBTA has already gifted
right.
us a bus, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Just flip the... just reverse it.
Yeah.
Rather than give it to me 2:35, bring it to school in the morning.
All right.
The bus is already there because they have existed it. There's only one bus line
mm-hmm.
that brings kids specially to school early in the morning.
Okay.
That's the 72 bus. The 72 bus up in Concord Ave, up in Huron, on Huron Village, mm-hmm. drops kids off. If you get on that bus every morning at 7:30, you will get here at the latest by 7:45.
Right.
And that bus is supposed to stop in Harvard Station.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an electric bus ordinarily.
Mm-hmm.
But the bus... for us, doesn't go into Harvard Station. It drops off here at Felton Street.
Right.
If those kids come in late, there are like 45 to 50 kids who come in late.
Mm-hmm.
We radio ahead and say 72 bus is late, right?
Mm-hmm.
That bus does not pass through any public housing.
Mm-hmm.
It passed through Harvard housing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why the 72 bus was developed that way.
Yeah.
There is no 72 bus in the afternoon that also leaves from here and goes back into
right.
West Cambridge.
Yeah, so
the 83 bus on Ringe Ave, right,
mm-hmm.
also leaves from the front of the building, Broadway, in the afternoon. It's also a bus that leaves in the afternoon but does not have a turnaround that comes in the morning.
Right.
All
that,
we're
that's
asking
for
the
Russell
MBTA,
Field, partly. That's really
it goes to Russell Field.
That
yeah.
is really helpful for the
that's
afternoon
helpful
for
teams.
Russell Field.
Yeah.
But I would switch that bus,
mm-hmm.
right? If you're looking at
talk
200 plus
first.
Kids coming in a day. And the 68 bus over here on Broadway.
We should
right?
write the proposal.
Right.
Yeah,
no.
Let's write the proposal.
I mean, we've done this work because the 68 bus does not run enough
right.
sessions, right? So it creates
right.
a demand on the 69,
mm-hmm.
which creates more traffic on that area. The 68, and the city has been really good in that we have created more blue bike lit stations here.
Right.
And we work with Jen Lawrence over at City Hall about reducing the price. I would just tell you this. I'm going to go for the home run. Because the MBTA was so unhelpful a couple of years ago, I started talking with Jen Lawrence about, I want as many blue, or they weren't called blue bikes then, but I want as many bike stations around here because I wanted to get off of the MBTA monthly pass and get all of our kids on the blue bikes,
mm-hmm.
right? The blue bikes passes for the whole year are considerably
right.
less expensive than a monthly
yeah.
pass.
Right.
The blue bikes you can use for the whole year,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you took your blue bike to a station and checked it in, you can take it right back
mm-hmm.
out and then not pay a fee for it, right?
Yeah.
We got stuck on helmets because blue bikes don't require you to wear helmets and
mm-hmm.
the city was on it. But it is my hope, right? And I'm not sure if this group has spoken to the MBTA directly, but that is something that I feel like we have to press on.
Yeah.
The 68 bus needs more frequent runs. Because that bus is not helpful for our kids.
That bus has never been helpful for our kids.
Never been
As
helpful.
A kid
right.
growing up here, I walked to school because the bus
mm-hmm.
was just
right.
never existent. And,
yeah.
and I know that Mr. Prince can talk to that same line as well.
Yeah.
But and I don't mean to cut.
No, go.
Mr. Smith.
My soapbox,
he's on it, and he's absolutely correct. Once again, I'll talk about the front door because
wait, can I just
getting
just the city we are giving free bus passes, free MBTA passes to all kids. So that's already an initiative for all low-income students.
Yeah. So
that will start next year, I think, right?
So it's in the city
and we've been working with
the
MBTA for years. So this isn't something just that is staying in this room. We've been doing that for a while, but I'm pretty sure the MBTA plan is already part of the city's budget.
Passes are great. Passes will be great.
So maybe that's one way that the city can help us be thinking about, here's the new rollout, and here's the proposal from the high school around which bus lines could be changed to help with this.
No, that's been in place for a while, and it'll just take a while for the MBTA to change. But I didn't want us to forget that while all of us might prefer everyone to be on blue bikes, some kids are not going to get on them, so free bus passes.
That's great.
I'll call the mayor after this meeting. Liz and I will talk about how to move forward with the MBTA conversation. So
those two bus lines are, they've given us
69 and 68, right?
No, 69 and 83.
There's been a conversation with Jen Lawrence since we've talked about this before, and MBTA has what they call a Better Bus Project, where they've been touring different communities, looking at routes. These specific recommendations have been shared with Jen Lawrence, who is our contact with MBTA. Keep pushing.
Yeah. If we just flip those, I'm telling you that makes a difference, particularly on the 69 area. The 83 bus, I get it. It has to be there for practices, and we are appreciative of that. But I would much rather have kids coming in. And just the last piece, we talked about, just the equity around who should be getting out of this neighborhood earlier in the afternoon, and then who should be coming into the neighborhood earlier in the day, right? So, just make it equitable or equal on both ways. It's not equitable, equal on both ways, right?
Good start.
We want kids all coming in early on time, so let's flip that, right? And we don't, I don't know, it's just strange to have the buses, except for the 83. Why does 69 need to go down Cambridge Street so early in the afternoon? Why do kids need to leave here so quickly?
I would venture a guess as when I was a student here, because there was a death.
Yeah.
You know, the stabbing that occurred, it was like, get the East Cambridge kids out early.
Get them back to
safety reasons, and I'm guessing that's where it started.
And I would guess the community asked for that. The community probably asked for that. So now we have to switch the community. So it wasn't just...
I'm going to get it out by 10. And I know Dan Monahan wanted to say something. Dan, what?
Not about transportation, but as long as you guys have been
in trouble.
There's lots of points around that. So I want to go back to a couple things. So I appreciate the sort of questions around educators, and I completely agree with a lot of what has been said here, particularly with Mr. Smith. I might broaden it a little bit, and I've said this before, from the educators that I hear from, they're all over the map on this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, some people are how Mr. Smith, said, we gotta have this accountability. Like, we're not holding them accountable. And then, actually, on my way over here, I talked with other teachers, that's not gonna work. Like, accountability isn't the way to get our kids into the classrooms, right? We have to think of other ways to do that.
Yeah.
And so I raise that as in, and I really appreciate what Dean Prince also said around when educators sort of experience this, their mindset mindset around it shifts. And I would argue that this is actually not a technical fix, this is an adaptive change. And so this adaptive change means you have to change your beliefs. It's not just about a process to do, you have to actually, come to the same common understanding. And I would also argue that if we don't have that common understanding, any technical fix you make is not going to work, because people will implement it differently. Mm-hmm. So to me, what's most important actually is conversations with the faculty to make sure that they are on board, understand what's going on with this, experiences where they can actually see the benefits of it, I think is really important, because right now a lot of people are all over the map. So as far as where educators are, I think that's a really important piece. Yeah. And I appreciate that all the deans of students are here, and you guys are working together. Mm-hmm. And I think that, the conversations that are happening in here are really positive, but these level of conversations need to happen with educators so they're on board with that. The other thing I just wanted to go back to, and this was sort of going all the way back to one of the first questions that committee member Nolan had raised, which is around the question of why. So it feels a little bit like the attendance is sort of, if you have an infection, you take, you get a temperature, you take aspirin, and that pulls your temperature down, but it doesn't actually fix the infection in the first place. So we really need to think about, like, this. The attendance is sort of a symptom as opposed to the actual root cause problem. And so I would urge, I mean, I appreciate the, like, a lot of the work that you talk about engaging students in that to really understand it, and I would suggest you push that even deeper, really around, like, and be able to actually sort of quantify some of that data, you know, not, I mean, maybe surveys, but, like, intergroup interviews and focus groups in a really systematic way. To be able to say, like, this is why, and this is sort of what's going on with it. And then I think to make clear connections to between the why and the solutions, right? Like, so I can kind of see some of those whys in your solutions, but it wasn't explicit. And so when you're talking about it and thinking about it, like, this is why we're doing these independent, these ISPs, I can't remember, the individual student plans, is because of this. Right, so making those connections more clear so that there's, and again, it's sort of about like a common vision and we're moving forward and this is why we're doing what we're doing. So just sort of some feedback around that, and I'm happy to, you know, help work with that more if people need to. But
yeah, I mean, I think it would be great to, you know, and Damon, this is on you, it's to bring the teachers more into the conversation, however that functions here. Just to follow up on that, it sounds like some of these issues are about students not liking their class, right? I don't want to go to class because it's boring or whatever. So I hope there's conversations with teachers about how to make this class accessible, engaging to every student. You need to change your pedagogy. Are some of those conversations going on?
Constantly.
Hmm?
Constantly. We're okay. Always having conversations with our teachers, professional development, about how to teach all students. Yeah.
Okay, but in terms of this specific student is not coming to class because...
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so
yeah.
That's kind of part
that's
of
part of the what I would call the informal individualized support plans that are already in place,
okay.
Right? I mean, the number of group emails I have that are all the teachers plus LC team for an individual student,
okay.
I mean, they're just constantly flowing. In that.
What can we do in this government class to make the student more engaged?
Plus our TATs, which is our teacher assistant teams, where we pull all the teachers together to try to diagnose what's going on with the kid. To figure out, you know, they're doing really well in math, but they're not in English, so what's going on here?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, I think I wanted to say, but let me just go back to the question.
Can I just make one comment?
I'm sorry, yeah, of course.
Yeah, and I'm just going to say from a personal point of view, is that I had a teacher in high school who connected with me when I was struggling and not feeling engaged, because there were certain things going on at home. So teachers really can be pivotal in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And the teacher connected me with the social worker at the high school, and that made a huge difference in the rest of my time in high school. So it's like any like adult in the school that a student can connect to and feels comfortable with and feels like they're understood can help connect them into the supports that you guys are describing are going on in terms of the support plans.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
I just want to say that these 2 weeks, because this wasn't a chronic absentee presentation, it was an AV presentation primarily, and we weave the two together. There are more clearer links there between the update at the top around the data and then a more tiered plan addressing the data in the top link. So you'll see what subgroups came to the top, what were some of the ideas that, and then in the bottom link, okay, how are we thinking about implementing that tier proposal in conversation with teachers before that were to be rolled out.
If you could just send the presentation, whole presentation to us.
That's what I was just thinking. What we'll do is, because they won't have access to it through your account way, but I can get it out to them.
Yeah,
so
just
I'll make a
email
copy
them in PowerPoint would be great.
I'll send it to Josha.
But back to the question about 10-minute passing, the form of passing time and start time, things like that, where is that conversation here at CRLS? Because 4 minutes does seem pretty.
So for that process, we've engaged in a significant amount of collaborative work with students and staff members. And we had a working group on scheduling where we proposed a number of changes and looked at a number of changes. That work was also in context for the superintendent's plan around the school day, professional time in school day.
So it's sort of still, I'm going to actually stop, so it's still sort of in process and it would not be appropriate.
I apologize, I have to go to work, so.
Okay,
but
that's fine, that's the answer.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's still, that's moving
yes,
forward. Because that is part of what we're talking about here, is human time. And then the other thing I wanted to ask about is this connection about the city, saying we want to partner with the city. What does that actually look like in your mind so that we can take that back? And I don't know, Dr. Turk, if you have connections with Elden Seminoff, if you're in these conversations, but what role can we play and what would that look like from your point of view?
So certainly the MBTA piece is clear. The T-passes for the MBTA, great. Blue bikes, I mean, I hear what you're saying. if blue bikes could get helmets, that'd be great. But also thinking about some of the substantive issues related to more social, emotional, mental health access points. I want to be very clear that we have actually increased services and opportunities with the Teen Health Center. Mm-hmm. So we do have more counselors and social workers available. Mm-hmm. And those lists aren't as long as they were last year, but they're still waiting lists, right?
We've waitlisted our Teen Health Center?
Yes.
And for mental health?
And we've increased services.
I mean, they cannot take more students.
Right.
And that's with an increase in service.
Yes.
That's with an increase in service.
And is that because we don't have enough personnel, or
across the border, if we had general ed social workers that could run groups in school, that would be a fix too, right? But we have to service the kids with IEPs first, and then any availability they're maxed out.
Well, this is a huge issue from the school committee because we're in charge of the budget.
Yeah,
so the more we understand this issue, I think it's more we can advocate for those types of issues.
Yeah, I mean, I think just the need is greater in our community, right? And so we certainly, our partners at, the Health Alliance and the Teen Health Center have increased services available, mm-hmm. but it just speaks to the needs that mm-hmm. our students have, right? Mm-hmm. So thinking a little bit more about how does the city support a larger focus citywide mm-hmm. on mental and social emotional health, right? Mm-hmm. Access points need to be increased, definitely. But having, we had last week was, since May is Mental Health Awareness Month, mm-hmm. we had class-based assemblies last week. And the thought and the idea is that there needs to be a more proactive approach around developing skill set, coping mechanism, those things that mm-hmm. that help students not necessarily, need to see someone professionally, individually, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
How are we doing that work, but in the community, as Angie was saying, for the other parts of the day that are not school-based,
yeah.
right?
I want to take that word community and actually broaden it a bit, because mm-hmm. what we've seen over the last couple of years, as people like Bob Jacobs and Ellen Zemanoff mm-hmm. and others mm-hmm. have been trying to work across the community, the full mm-hmm. community, mm-hmm. to see where there are areas of need. Mental health issues, or mental health as an umbrella, mm-hmm. is like the number one area mm-hmm. that people are seeing, asking for, mm-hmm. desiring more support. Mm-hmm. So it's not isolated just to the school department. We're seeing this across the city.
Youth center.
Across the city.
Yeah, yeah.
And then some of that is more specifically outlined under the tier 3 part of that link.
Okay.
So it says things here like teen health centers, after school programs, workforce, youth centers, probation officers. I think there's lots of different ways to be thinking about it.
Yeah.
And maybe even just having an initial meeting around, here's a proposal from the high school around more specifics.
Uh-huh.
Clearly, Damon has like the MBTA, the actual lines. And so what would those bullet points be for to ask from the dean in terms of
specific. And you mentioned internships,
housing has come up for some of our senior. I mean, there's just like a lot of different opportunities, I think. But even just a citywide campaign around, we believe as a city that attendance is important, co-design.
Yes, some cities have done that.
Yeah.
Some cities have done that. Yeah.
I just want to make an observation, because within the last couple of minutes, three different walkie-talkies have gone. So
okay, we can wrap up. I want to wrap up. It's on your schedule. Patty, did you want to finish something?
Yeah, so I have been wavering on this idea of whether there's this 10-point buyback. I support fully what was presented. Mm-hmm. My concern about not having any 10-point consequence is the effect also on the students who are showing up every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a big issue, that that if we want the message that attendance matters, and but there's no consequences at all if you don't ever show up, even though there's three very clearly laid out ways that if you are absent, you will be supported to work on that. And particularly the individual support plan, I think, is pretty important. It, in essence, gives a lot of flexibility to say, this is someone who just really needs our support and is not able to do the first two, and we're supporting them for that. So I want us to pass this so that we can go back to the school committee. So I want to make a motion that we accept that as an addition to our existing policy.
Yep.
And
I mean, we do want to run this with teachers.
Yeah.
Too,
okay.
Just proposed,
yeah. We have a lot of other stakeholders that we want to
okay.
put
so
in.
So you haven't run this by the others.
No,
okay.
This was just for you guys first. Like the 10-point reduction was student initiated a couple years ago, and then we just came up with two other ideas, but definitely.
Okay. So when can that happen? Just I want this to move forward. We've been working this a long time. So let's make sure that the momentum continues so that we can have a really good policy and it's in place in plenty of time for next school year. It not even, but that means it has to be before the summer, because just to remind everybody, the reason we changed midstream, which created, I know, a lot of consternation, not to mention probably some anger directed partly at us, we only did it because we had three different policies in different places. So depending on where you looked, you might not even have known there was a buyback. So I'm just reminding all of us that that was the context for us switching in the middle of the year.
No,
I looked it up.
That's not correct. It was because of the data that it was so
no,
disproportionate.
No, Emily, we had one.
Well, that was part
one
of
policy on the website in one place, and a different policy in a different place, and a different one printed. So depending on who you were as a student, this was a year and a half ago. That's been fixed, but I want to avoid that. And the way to avoid that is, I believe that policy and buyback was changed late enough that it didn't get out in time. So.
So does it sound like if the deans and the principals and talk to the staff and whenever it's ready to come back up, sounds like you guys are supportive, folks have to talk to the staff.
We need to have another meeting of this subcommittee in order to have us pass the, recommend the policy to the larger school committee, because it's policy, it needs to come before. So I just want to make that happen. I'm fully supportive. It sounds like Chair Dexter is too.
I mean, I think, well, I do want to take it to the staff, but I also don't want to slow the process up, right? So the 10-point reduction is not a change to what it currently exists, right? The additional pieces would be the studentship class, which we want, we're developing that on when it would happen, what it would look like. Oh, I'll click it back. Here, I can't get it.
Yeah, and SIP.
And the buyback. So two elements, A and C, well, actually,
A is already in place.
A and the 10-point reduction are already there. It's the individual support plan. It's really B. Mm-hmm. And C is a more formalized thing.
C is in place.
Which is already happening.
That's right. I don't want not to have teachers be able to see it, but
right.
I also don't want to have to come back to another subcommittee meeting.
We know that.
And have, like, I want to be able to do that. So, and I want people to know before they leave, right? So it's not that huge of a change.
So if you look at this, you've got all these things here. You've got this piece that was student generated.
Yep, we're not shrinking.
Right, this piece that has been in existence,
mm-hmm.
and that there is some desire on the part of some, I'm not articulating this, but some folks who are interested in continuing to have some form of a 10-point reduction. The addition of these two pieces that have been an outgrowth of the conversations and work and pilots that have been, mini pilots that have been happening throughout the
mm-hmm.
year. So it's sort of a combination of the work, but I think what Damon really wants to do is make sure that people have had a chance to see this as a whole, not in the pieces, in the different pieces.
But
so here's what can happen. You can do your work with teachers.
Just a very quick.
But you know what? You can do your work with teachers.
Yeah.
Assemble whatever feedback, or if there's any tweaks or changes, send it to Dr. Turk, and just Dr. Turk and the subcommittee can meet. I don't think we would need another full presentation.
Exactly.
So
if that alleviates your concerns, that's...
Yeah, yeah, no, I just, I mean, I
No, we're not going to try and assemble you again.
Okay.
Right.
I mean, you put in a lot of work, you put up with us, so... But let me just, can I just say one technical thing that seems small, but not... Mm-hmm. The difference between a 10-point reduction and a 10% reduction can be very big, because mm-hmm. it can actually be more equitable to have a percentage deduction. Mm-hmm. So if you're a child with an A average and you're getting 100, you're going to be dropped down to 90.
Correct.
With a 10-point. But if you're a child with a C average, you're going to go from a 70 to a 60, mm-hmm. which is a much bigger jump from a C to a D than from an A to a B. Mm-hmm. So if you had a percentage drop, you would go from a 70, you'd lose 7 points. 10%, and you go down to a 63. In other words, it buffers the lower achieving students a little bit.
So
that came from students.
Got away from that.
Yeah. I know they did, but yeah. I don't understand why the students.
It's the same offense, and it's an equitable
yeah.
consequence.
And I think there was a
percentage is equal.
You know what, Emily? Both of them are both are
they're both
they're just
though,
different.
My understanding is also when the policy was written, the intent was 10 points, and the policy went in. Using the word percentage, and so that's what our registrar, who's the person that does all this math, went off of. And by the time we realized, like, wait, these aren't 10 points like we intended, this is percents, it already had been going, so it took a little bit to, I think we
right.
waited a full year, so as not to change midstream.
Okay.
So my understanding is the original
There's two
intent.
Other words to pay attention to in the last line. If a student does not successfully complete a support plan, the support suggests they have to do C as opposed to one of the ones above. And they may receive, to me that's unclear as opposed to they will receive. So I would just encourage you to think about those, because may suggests it's not a consequence, and it puts someone in a position of deciding whether they will receive it, and I'm not sure you intended to do that.
Okay.
We're going to get out of here very soon. First, I'm going to put a motion on the table that we accept this work. We accept this plan tentatively and as a subcommittee, and that Dr. Turk will come back to us before we put something on the formal agenda.
Within a month? Cause
before we can get this done by the end of the school meeting.
Well, within a month, because we know what will happen if it's...
Don't we have to have a motion May 21st?
Exactly.
The original motion says May 21st. So.
Yeah.
We have a last meeting. We have two meetings in June.
It could be beginning of June, but I don't want to do that.
Okay,
so let's try
to
communicate
with staff
members before then.
Yeah.
Can you get to staff members before then? Okay, great.
We also have a summer meeting that we can pass for the second reading.
Yeah, no, because the printing stuff, that's where we got in trouble last time. We have to have this all teed up before then.
Let's leave that. I want to hear from Dan, and then I want to adjourn.
Well, I can tell you what you're going to hear from staff, which is you're going to get all over the map.
Right.
Some people are going to hate it, some people are going to love it. Until you make that adaptive change, you're going to get that same answer from people.
Yeah.
So it's not just about sharing this policy with staff, it's about actually having those deeper conversations about that understanding.
Right.
But the other thing...
I'll talk to you about it in a second.
Okay, yeah. The other thing that I also wanted to raise is that, and this came up in the conversation we had in the recap last year, I think, was... clarity around how this interacts with each teacher's actual grading policy. So some teachers, and the reason why it's important is that it can actually be like double jeopardy.
Yep.
So if some teachers are, say that you have to have that conversation so that this connects in with the individual grading policies of educators.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
It sounds like there's a whole other layer of conversation, which is the teachers have to get together and have this conversation about 10 points and percentage, right?
You
I mean,
what?
They
you guys
have reading policies, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it relates to this. I'm sure, I know because I taught for a little bit, that the teachers are already applying this disproportionate according to their own. I'm sure that they're not all. I'm sure, because I know, I'm telling you right now, if I was a teacher, I would not do it, but I would figure out a way and I would just not do it. And I don't know if there's like a requirement.
Well, the way this is set up, you can't.
Yeah. It's out of
this
their
is
hands.
Actually,
so it's out of their hands.
This is out of their hands.
Okay.
But
what's
the rest
in
of
their hands is the, I teach first period. Historically, there's 5 of my 20 students here.
Right.
So I tell kids, as long as you're here by 8:20, it's all good. I don't
I
grade the due now. Whereas
right.
the teacher next door says,
the
there's a due
doesn't.
Now that's from 8:05 to 8:10,
right.
and if you're not
exactly.
here to do it, you're going to
exactly.
lose 10 points every single day.
Right. So that's what you're
that's
talking
the
about.
That's the nuance.
Exactly.
Okay.
So
take attendance on time.
I just also want to say that I think we've made great strides,
mm-hmm.
and this is not the end.
Yeah.
This is actually, I do not want to sound cliche. This is a new beginning. And this is ongoing work. It really and truly is ongoing work. And so I think that with the teachers, you know, that's something we've been talking about so much that we've got to bring in more folks to continue on. But we really have made great strides. Yeah. And so I absolutely openly want to say, and for the record, I'm really proud of this team. Mm-hmm. We've really stuck to it. And I'm excited about how we are moving forward.
Can we, before we go, Ryan, can we hear from you about HSET, how that extension program, there's been ups and downs with, we know, tardiness and absences there, and there was huge efforts over the last couple of years. So, and you're here, so instead of not getting the benefit of your sense of this discussion, also what your experience is with students there, because it's particularly a subset more prone to this this challenge.
Yeah, most of our students are chronically absent, so they're all experiencing this the same way that the students at the high school are. Similarly, this year we've had a lot of ups and downs with attendance. Our students struggle with trauma, social emotional issues, homelessness, a myriad of reasons why they're not coming to school. So I have the benefit of having a really small faculty that gets to know the students intimately. So we try to provide as many supports as possible before implementing a 10-point reduction to their grade. A lot of the talk around individual support plans, we're doing a lot of that with students to prevent them from getting to that point. But we still have a number of students that do get an AV because they don't want to work with us or because they don't have the means to work with us through an individual support plan. So I'm, as well as others have stated, I'm really excited about the work that we've been doing. It's been really great to collaborate with the high school more so the last couple of years. I know high school extension has not had that relationship in the past. And Damon and I, as well as with the deans, have really made a point to try to collaborate more often. So I'm really excited about that moving forward. I think that we're going to be able to make some real strong headway in the chronic absenteeism area, and the data showed that. I know our school has similarly dropped a few percentage points this year for chronic absenteeism, which is hopeful. And we're continuing to try to make sure that we make headway as we move forward.
The data was not inclusive of the extension program here?
It was
inclusive. So all those numbers included extension school.
And just for the record, I am part of the CEA, and I do teach students. I teach 4 classes, and I teach high school students every week. So there is some teacher voice. I'm not saying it in that way, but there is some teacher voice, just to point out that like we have been talking about some of the specific students that are not routinely attending even some of the work that I'm doing and ways to support them. So that's just like one other perspective, but I do think broadening it and really rooting this in teachers and students and families as well is really, really important.
So we're going to close. I'm just going to say the last thing is the chair. One thing that I would like us to do as a school committee is to get this data every semester. So at the end of every semester, show us just who's in AV, who's getting penalized, so we can get a, because that's how this whole conversation started, is seeing that there were very big differences in who was losing time or losing grades, et cetera. So I think if we can just keep track of that and have that be part of the practice, is every quarter, every semester, we get that exactly the data that we got today, which was great. That would be helpful.
And you guys are already looking at it. So.
And yeah, you guys are already. Right. Just so that we can keep this on our mind, and I would say to Dan, if you can keep us informed about the teacher perspective and how things are working, so that we, you know, we can just keep moving this, as Bobby says, we can just keep moving this forward and addressing it. So, motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
All those in favor?
Aye.
So, thank you so much. Again, I just really appreciate you working with us.
Yes, it's very good.